Well, welcome everyone to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee meeting. It is September 21st at 6:01 p.m. We have met quorum with myself, Chuck, KD, Melissa. We expect others, other members to join, but since I know people have some deadlines tonight, we're trying to get started on time and have a really efficient meeting. So before we begin, does anyone have to disclose a conflict of interest?
I have to disclose a conflict of interest. This is Kay Coons. I had filed a report with the IOC, and I will recuse myself of any voting or anything related to my incident or matter.
Thank you, Kay. Okay, so last meeting minutes, they were sent out with the Google transcribe. They're sometimes hard to follow because they get a lot right, but they also get things wrong. Has everyone been able to review the minutes that were sent out?
I have. Yes.
Okay. Do I have a motion to accept as presented?
Motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
I second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So moved.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. I see Barbara just joined.
Hey, Barbara.
So, any updates from ADOA?
I do not have any new updates for the committee, other than the annual report is due November 1st. Other than that, I don't have any other updates. And you're right, on the Google Meet transcription, it does interpret things wrong. So I try to read through those as best I can to get out the obvious stuff. Some of it I don't know, and I don't want to mess with it too much either to mess with the interpretation of what somebody's trying to say. So if anybody notices anything as you read through that, please let me know, or a correction on that, and I'll be happy to make that correction in the minutes for you. So, but other than that, I don't have any other updates.
Okay. Do we have any other IOC members on from other committees that would like to give updates? Okay. Hearing none.
I am Krista from, I'm from the DDD IOC on the West Valley, but I don't have any updates.
Oh, well, welcome as an IOC member also.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. Lisa, do you want to give your ASH administration update before we go on review action items?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. Thanks, Lori. Mike Sheldon, I do not believe, was able to join us today. I believe he's traveling. He was at the Western Wipshaw meeting with the other Western State Hospitals this week and presenting to them. So I believe he is en route. But I do have just a few updates, and I can answer any questions. But we'll be having our next civil patient forum on October 5th. And then in early November, we have our next quarterly forensic forum scheduled. And Tara's been doing a great job of kind of following up on those action items. One of the requests we got from the forensic patients that we were able to operationalize was to expand the things that patients can buy from Wackenhorst, which is a kind of a secured web-based place to buy product. We had a list of approved electronic devices. We've had ongoing conversations about the challenges with just the limit in quality and variety available there, but that is still a challenge. But we were asked to expand it to include things like clothing and hygiene products. So that has occurred. Now patients can get an expanded group of products from Wackenhorst. I think last time we met, we discussed the fact that forensic phone times have been expanded. So there's three blocks of time now, and patients can use the phones up to 11 p.m. now. So they're 11 to 1, 3 to 5, 7 to 11. And that is not significantly interfering with opportunities for programming. We are expanding effective January 1st. The forensic and civil patients will be able to be approved for up to 8 food visits with family members, loved ones, and other folks in their support circle instead of 4. So it'll be a total of 8 food visits per year. One of the most exciting things I have to report is the rehab team and Dr. Flowers have been working with the quality team. We've been looking at improvement opportunities throughout both civil and forensic rehabilitation programming. We have some exceptional programming, I believe, for both our civil and forensic patients, but we're looking at ways to just create more opportunities for variety and expansion, and particularly programs that will contribute to discharge readiness. And so on the civil hospital, beginning October 1st, our rehab team is going to finally begin community reintegration activities again. So rehab sponsored outings have not been in place on the civil campus since before the pandemic. So we're really excited to get that going. We believe that's going to have a real positive benefit for our civil patients.
One question on that, Lisa. When you talk about community visits with the civil patients, I know back when our loved one was there, they did not allow family to have community visits like they do on forensic. So are the community visits on civil going to be just staffing outings, or will it be with family members as well?
That's a great question. And I have not, what we did protocol for was for rehab sponsored outings. So it will be rehab teams and members of the civil campus population. It would not include family members. Now we do have folks already that are going on outings with their family members. That's certainly an option. But the sponsored events that we're planning and that I'm referring to are just for patients and rehab team members and possibly unit staff.
Okay. And the food visits, increasing them to 8, is not for both campuses, right? Forensic.
Correct.
And civil?
Okay. Yes. As the committee knows, we have really struggled with getting consistent barber and hair services on both campuses. So October 2nd, we have a cosmetologist who is starting as a pool staff member. We're going to try something a little different. And that person has gone through new employer orientation, and they will be a member of the staff, but on a kind of a per diem basis, not as like a full-time employee. But that, we're hoping, will create a little more flexibility and opportunity to get barber and styling services for our male and female patients on both campuses. So that starts October 2nd.
That sounds cool.
We do have some civil discharges occurring. We've had 5 discharges back to the community. We've got some forensic patients getting additional levels, transitioning over to CRU. So we're really working hard to, again, I think one of Mike's visions for sure is to just really prepare all of our patients for discharge and have programming that moves them toward healthy readiness for discharge. And then the last update I have, other than I know there's some things coming up on the agenda, but last month the committee asked about pet therapy, and one of the members gave us the link to Alliance of Therapy Dogs. That is the organization that we vetted, approved, and contracted with a couple of years ago. So we have an active contact with Alliance of Therapy Dogs. And Michelle Bethune and Scott from our rehab team on civil reach out to them regularly. We had a woman and her dog that were visiting both campuses. I'm very sad to report that the dog passed away in July. And we have not found another volunteer through Alliance of Therapy Dogs for our campus, but we continue to reach out to them regularly. And other than agenda items or any questions anybody has, I think that's the majority of my update.
Okay. Well, I think you've mentioned that Mike Sheldon is out on travel, And is Dr. Flowers joining, or do you know or if he is or he isn't?
I don't see him here, but it was my understanding that he, I don't know, something might have come up. I'll keep my my email and my chat open.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So review of action items. Is there any update on, let's see, last month? No, I think we are looking into a retaliation allegation, and you have sent over the files to review. And I think we have D. We have Alice, who is unable to be here today. She's out on vacation. And Barb, they are reviewing the records. Now, Barb, D said that she'll be able to report her findings next month. Will that give you enough time to report your thoughts next month on those files?
Are you talking to me, D?
No, D. I said D, but it's Alice and it's Barb.
Okay.
Oh, I saw Barb join. Maybe she jumped on and jumped off. I will ask her about that later. Okay. Let's see, follow up on previous or ongoing. We know that there was an allegation and several of us went and viewed the videos. That was still ongoing and it hadn't been finalized. So Lisa, do you want to report on that grievance related to the video that several of the IOC members went in and viewed on the staff, kind of what we think was antagonizing the patient? I think you reported last month that that the person was put on administrative leave while you looked into it.
Anytime we have an allegation that comes to the hospital, either through the complaints and grievance process or through an incident report from a staff or through any other manner, it's investigated immediately. Any video is reviewed immediately. And if it's warranted, the person will be put on administrative leave through the course of the investigation. One of the things the committee had asked for was our policy on progressive discipline. And in speaking with our human relations team, really the employees at the state hospital are subject to the same responsibilities, requirements, code of conduct, and then progressive discipline is as any state employee. So those really don't live in a policy, but there is a tool set that our human relations team works with supervisors on. So supervisors know that if things are egregious enough, they immediately go to human relations, human resources for consideration. But other things, it might be coaching, which is supported by human resources and leadership of, like in most cases, for the purpose of our discussion, nursing, since over half of our staff are either nurses or behavioral health techs, but it can be any staff person. If it's elevated, it might be elevated to a letter of expectation or a performance improvement plan. If there's a pattern identified, then it'll become more formal employee action up to like a suspension or obviously dismissal, which can happen immediately if something is egregious enough. But those cases are really considered by leadership of the department and supported by the human resource office. So it's kind of a challenge to take one instance and, you know, make a determination of what could have or should have happened. Obviously, we have many instances where we take pretty extreme disciplinary action when it's warranted, but our first and foremost objective is to coach and to give staff the resources to to do an effective job of having therapeutic relationships with our patients. One of the questions that the committee asked last week was for a pattern with the particular staff member that was observed in one of those two videos. So mm-hmm. we looked over the course of the last 2 years with our complaints and grievance and with HR. And I must share, it kind of made me uncomfortable because I think up to now, the Independent Oversight Committee has not really had a lot of human resources or employee-related feedback from us. But I wanted to look at that pattern. And we had one other patient who had made a similar complaint about the same staff member, very close to the same time on the same unit, very similar allegations. But other than those two complaints, there's no history in the last 2 years of this particular staff member having complaints filed through complaints or grievances or incidents identified. So we do have a process to make sure that, you know, we've got progressive discipline, but our number one priority is to have adequate training, adequate oversight, and effective coaching for our staff. And I hope that answers the committee's question.
Yeah, I think so. I wonder too, in that situation, I know that the hospital put the person on admin leave and investigated. And we did have a visit with the person that had filed the grievance, and that the committee was reviewing the tapes to see if we could substantiate anything. The person said that they are very satisfied with the hospital, with the move of that lead BHT, and the person feels safe and the new staff is treating the person well. My question is, would that, since that was a known problematic behavior between the two individuals, would that BHT, lead BHT, ever float back to the same unit with that same patient if it's known that they've had an issue?
I can't answer that. Lori, it would really be up to the treatment team. It would be dependent on the needs of the unit, and it would certainly be a factor if they needed to, but in some emergency situations that might occur. The other thing just to share with you is we've got a quality team of about 10 people that take the lead in reviewing those videos. They also do the complaints and grievance reports and share video with leadership when there's any kind of possible concern or need to address something. But our team, including myself as the chief quality officer, are not privy to information about people that go on administrative leave. So unless somebody like a patient or a peer were to just share that, we really work hard, just like we work hard to keep patient information confidential, we keep employee information confidential too. So I cannot even tell you, I know there were two instances we discussed over the course of the last couple months. I cannot tell you who did or did not go on administrative leave because the quality team does not play a role in that decision, and we are not privy to that information.
Okay. Do any other members, IOC members, have any questions or comments on any of the updates from the hospital? Okay, none being heard, let me go ahead and do an overview of incident and accident, and then we'll go to the virtual site report. And so the first thing I was going to say is I noticed in the incident and accident, the assault perpetrators, the chart was pretty dramatic this month. There was one patient, I don't think I have it. Well, there was one patient that had 13 assaults on staff. And that patient coincidentally was just discharged to a skilled nursing facility earlier this month. So I infer from that that the person must have had other things going on other than just their behavioral health to be able to get admitted to a skilled nursing facility, because I know that's difficult to do. And
if I may just add to Lori, one of the things Mike has really been eager to address is we do have a number of patients with medical or neurocognitive challenges that are not what the hospital was designed to treat. And one example of that is dementia. You know, when we have patients who have dementia, it really does not make them good candidates for, you know, psychiatric treatment. And it's a big challenge because skilled nursing facilities certainly aren't equipped for aggressive behavior. But we really run into a situation where we have a patient who's just not really a candidate for the kind of treatment we provide. And it breaks my heart because I don't know what the answer is for those individuals. What I can tell you about those assaults is they did not include staff injury for the most part. I think one staff broke their glasses, but for the most part, it was like scratching and hitting, but not serious injuries. I'm glad to report.
Lisa, some of the dementia facilities, if someone could be discharged there because they're prepared to handle aggressive patients. And in fact, one of my friend's wives is in one, and he keeps me up to date on what's going on with her. But, you know, I don't know if that's a possibility, if this occurs again, to have the patient discharged to a dementia, you know, they're a dementia facility, which are like little pods. And it's much more home-like, even than a skilled nursing facility.
Thank you. Yeah, well, this patient was discharged, so we worked with her health plan, and I hope she's in a facility that's better equipped to meet her needs.
Thank you.
Yeah. And other than that top person, assaulter, perpetrator with 13 assaults, the next one was 8. And again, it was patient on staff. So I don't know if they're similar or behaviors. And then again, it's probably 10 or 12 people that have the majority of the assaults in the chart. Okay, the first one, let me see. The first incident and accident is AFS 2023-3278. And it was an assault. And I'm trying to see why I put this. It was a patient hitting a strange chair. Oh, I added something. So where I highlighted it, it was a patient hitting a staff, and they reviewed it, and they had two registry persons assigned to watch, and they went to assist another patient during that time. The patient hit the staff because they thought they could get away with it. And what was in there, it said that night it was one of the unit's quarterly drills with nearly all of that unit's nursing staff present. So they ran through all the scenarios and interventions, and they reminded staff that only core experienced registry staff can be assigned to be a 2-to-1 to patient at all times. So that seems like it be reasonable that you would want either full-time staff or very experienced registry staff to be assigned to patients. So they know, because it appears that the ones that were weren't experienced and turned their back, and then this assault happened. So it appears that that's kind of, is it a policy or is it kind of a unwritten policy to try to have full-time staff or experienced staff work with the more difficult patients?
It's certainly our goal when possible. You know, two of the metrics that the hospital is measuring, I don't have them with me, but we're measuring and really working on is the number of patients who are on continual observation that either require one-to-one or two-to-one, just monitoring that, and the overall number of registry staff that are required for shifts. And our goal right now is to have the number of shifts covered by registry staff below 25%. And the more we can get our core staff trained and retain them, obviously, hopefully the lower and lower that will go. But there are some shifts where we have more than 25% of the people on a shift are registry staff. So when possible, we absolutely want those one-to-ones to be people who are familiar with our patients. And the lead techs really play a big role because we've got some pretty seasoned and stable lead techs, probably five or six on each unit, that when they're on the shift, they can do their best to make those tasks so that we've got that coverage.
Okay. Next one is ASH 2023-3382, and it was an AWOL attempt while at Valleywise. So a patient was accompanied to Valleywise by a nurse, and while waiting, the patient yelled, "I'm going to run," but they were able to secure the patient and restrain the patient in the chair. And the follow-up was that they initiated a hold, escorted the patient back to ASH and into their unit. And then they removed the TSDs. But then in the recommendations from security, they recommended that the patient be transported in full TSDs for future outside medical appointments, as this patient was its second occurrence on trying to go AWOL at an appointment. So when they talked earlier about that they had TSDs on, did they have like just upper ones and now they're saying do full, or do they usually do lower ones? I was just questioning because it said that there were TSDs because they removed them, but then the recommendation was for full TSDs.
Yeah, but if that was a recommendation from security, that may or any TSDs would have a behavioral health medical provider order. So I would have to look at the medical records to see, and it, I would have to look at a future instance where there was an appointment. So the incident report is really to document the incident. So I could definitely follow up on that for you.
Okay, thank you. Next one is ASH 2023-3405, and it was injury to a patient. Patient, when they went, they had a 2-to-1 on night shift, and when they went to check on their patient, the patient was on the floor. So the patient fell. Reading through that, it looks like that they helped the patient get back into the wheelchair, and then subsequent to that, they transferred her to Valleywise via ER because she was having hip pain and knee pain. But with that, just a question. When they say the 2-to-1 day shift was transferring and relieving the NOC, whatever that means, NOC shift 2-to-1, the night shift and overnight shift?
Yes, that's night shift.
When you have a 2-to-1 like that, does that mean that two people are even in the room when the person's sleeping, and then do the others come in to swap out in the room, or does do they do it outside the room? Because I'm wondering if she's on a 2-to-1, how did she fall and end up on the floor?
Yeah, a 2-to-1 would need, Lori, I apologize, I was taking a note. Can you give me that last 4 digits again of that one?
3405.
Thank you. When a patient is on 2-to-1, it means there's 2 staff members available at all times to assist them, but they are going to be in close proximity, but not so close that they would necessarily be able to prevent the patient from falling or, in some instances, from self-harm. This was I can share with you, I think, that this is the same patient that was the high assaulted patient that went to skilled nursing. There was some behaviors of, unless we physically restrain somebody, and that is, of course, our last resort, having 2 staff people to assist isn't necessarily going to stop some of these behaviors. That's an ongoing challenge and a reason why we're really looking at the number of patients that are put on 2-to-1.
Okay. Thank you. The next one is ASH 2023-3465. And this one was a disrobing, exposing. The thing that stood out on this one was something unusual that said, one, it named a unit I'm not familiar with, and 2, it talks about a patient being treated at Tempe post-acute. Usually, I see them going to Valleywise.
I apologize, Lori. This probably should not have made it. You know, we've got an algorithm that determines which ones go in. This is an ACPTC patient who is being treated off-site for some care. So that's why you haven't heard of that unit. And I'm not sure how the algorithm let it through because it wasn't marked as ACPTC. So because it was off-ground. So I apologize for that.
Okay. Well, that makes sense why I couldn't recognize anything. Oh, that's why. References in there.
Yeah. You know our units.
Yeah. Okay. The next one is ASH 2023-3550. And this one was a fall. This one was on the Sybil campus. And a patient stopped and fell on their behind and started to fall back. And the tech saw the patient and was able to catch the patient's head before hitting the ground. So I thought that was a good outcome, that they were quick and responsive and prevented a head injury potentially.
Thank you. Lori, yeah. That reminds me of 2 other things I didn't put in our update. Our falls committee is doing some really active work, and our occupational therapy team from rehab is helping. We're laminating and posting posters on all of the units with like reminders about ways to prevent falls. And you'll notice that our pharmacy team is now being notified of every single fall incident so that they can do a medication review. So we're really working hard to get our number of falls reduced.
Okay. And the last one that I pulled tonight was an unusual one. It's ASH 2023-3573. And this one, an outside agency called in because a patient had called claiming that they had taken 6 tablets of fentanyl and wanted to be taken to the hospital. And so they did a med search and they checked and they, observe the patient to make sure that their assessment, their pupils, their sound, their tone, their temp, all of that was okay. And then they did a UA. But this was unusual because I haven't seen that where they're calling to an outside agency to try to get to the hospital. But it seems like it wasn't legitimate, like that they hadn't taken fentanyl. and they didn't find anything when they called. Apparently, yeah, they called the Veterans Crisis Center. And then someone from there called the hospital. So that was unusual. That's why I brought that one up. Okay, that's all of them I pulled. We had several visits this month. So in order to give you guys a break, anyone else that was involved in the visits, I know, I think Melissa and Dee, were you involved in some? I was in a few, and I know Alice and I were in some, and then Chuck and I were in others.
So this is Melissa. I had Kay and I were in one the other day. Did I have another one?
I couldn't remember who was with. I may have been with Alice.
But I can report on the one call.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had a call the other day, Kay and I did, with one of the patients, and it was the topic of conversation was outgoing mail. And you know, understanding that the history was that I guess so. Hold on, sorry. So the patient told a story, I guess, a few years ago. Some mail had been thrown, some outgoing mail had been thrown away, but there was a tech who retrieved that outgoing mail and mailed it. And this was all in sort of setting up, the patient telling that story was in setting up some of the issues that they're having with the outgoing mail. And because of that, this patient doesn't really trust to give mail to staff because of this person's experiences. Now wants to give it directly to, I think it's Luana and Mercedes, but the people that, to my understanding, are in the, or take care of the mail.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. And I think this individual wrote a complaint. They would like to be able to hand their mail to anyone they see fit. You know, they were saying it's their right to be able to hand it to another patient, you know, if they trust that patient, to bring it to the mailroom. But apparently, it's the patient's understanding that Ash said only staff or the unit clerk can take the mail. It gets picked up by designated staff at a designated time and place determined by the unit. And so they want to know, like, who made this? Is this a policy? Who made this policy? Why can't they give it to another patient to bring, you know, to the mailroom to give to Luana or Mercedes directly? Sorry, I'm just looking at my notes. They feel a little discriminated against. They don't understand, you know, why they can't do this. And there's been, and then also the patient was saying that they felt some retaliation when it comes to this. But that's all I have.
Okay.
So essentially, cool. It's trying to understand the policy. And again, why they can't just, if they want to give it to another patient to take to the mailroom, is really the gist of it.
So do we want to ask if there is a mail policy and what is the policy? I know this reminds me of a similar complaint several years ago that patients didn't feel comfortable giving grievances to the unit staff, because often they were about the unit staff. So I think to resolve that, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that you put boxes in each of the units so they can put it in a box and then someone goes around and collects the grievances.
I can tell you that that's not happening. We don't have unit boxes where it's anonymous. Like they definitely know where our mail is outgoing and to whom it's written to.
So Lisa, is there a policy on mail?
Yes, there is a policy on mail, but it doesn't speak to that. It's more about just security and just managing the security of the hospital. Our staff are required to submit, you know, to mail without tampering with it, eliminating it, anything. So it's really in the interest of security that we're trying to manage that. But to your question about the complaints and grievances, there is a box on the unit where patients can put complaints and grievances, and those are picked up by the quality team. So yeah, I guess we can look at that's an issue that has not come up on a lot of units. There's one particular patient that has a concern about that, but maybe we can come up with an alternative way to make sure outgoing mail gets managed in a way that meets the patient's needs without compromising security.
Yeah. Is there any reason why the patient, if they have had an issue or perceived issue in the past, couldn't they just always bring it themselves to the post office when they're out on the mall?
Certainly. That's what most patients do.
But I think I just want to make it clear. I think, you know, this patient was saying that they can't just give it to another patient to bring directly to Luana or Mercedes. That it has to go to a unit to someone.
Unless the patient has a package and is going to the mail room, they don't have special trips to the mail room to drop off mail. And because we're a secured facility, we are locked on unit. In the past, this patient has asked other patients to walk his mail down to the mail room when they have packages. There's a few staff members that he does trust, but, you know, he's more concerned about, he wants to see the policy and who wrote the policy. I guess it's his biggest concerns currently. I think there's policy on incoming mail, but I don't think there's policy on outgoing mail, but that's my limited understanding.
So Lisa, if there is a policy on outgoing mail, could we motion to see that policy? We'll be clearer about it?
Certainly. I don't believe there is that addresses this particular issue, but I will confirm that. It really is just a matter of a practice to ensure security.
Okay. And that mail situation also, I had another visit. I think it was with Alice or it was with Chuck, because I've done several visits this month, but it was another patient, and they were talking about, you know, legal statutes of being allowed to have mail and not having anyone interfere with mail. I think the patient was upset that Ash or the facility had implemented a property request form for any packages. And the patient is protesting and won't use the form. And because of that, the patient said that he had been receiving packages, but now they're enforcing the rule and he doesn't know if it's legal or not. I think on the call, we said that we thought that they're probably, I know we know there's a contraband list. So it seems likely that when you have a package, I would think and that someone would be there when you open the package to make sure it's not contraband, no matter what you say is coming in. You could say, I'm getting a new pair of pants or a shirt, but maybe there's something else in there. So maybe if it was communicated, what is the mail policy even for incoming mail and packages? Because there seemed to be question in this patient's understanding of free commerce and free mail and no interference. So I think it may be helpful for them to understand it.
I think this patient's primary complaint is that this person believes that the patient or the package request forms are violating his rights to be able to acquire or dispose of property as he sees fit. That's under the SMI law, as well as not having his mail tampered with. He thinks that as long as it's not a contraband item, that he should be able to have that item. And so I think that that's the main issue. And so he's had issues, I think, at the package mailroom because he receives items like a USB thumb drive, and because it's not considered contraband, that he believes he should be able to have that item.
So Lisa, is this discussed with the patients so they absolutely know what they can bring in, what's allowed, what's not allowed?
I would submit that the management of property in and out of the hospital is one of the biggest risks we manage and also one of the most challenging things we manage. We do have a policy about packages, as Kay mentioned. We do have an approval process prior to requesting that things come in. We do our absolute best between our nursing team and our security team to keep the environment safe and to make sure that the any items that patients get as property is appropriate and safe. But it is an ongoing challenge. And we can put it on the forum again. I mean, we usually talk about that like we did with, you know, the expansion of walk and horse. But as far as when patients order material or when project things come in from their family members, we do have a policy and we pretty regularly look at that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lisa. That may help if we look at that policy again so we'll understand it and help.
Yeah, it is very much an ongoing challenge. We're happy for any support and thoughts that the Independent Oversight Committee has, for sure.
Okay. Then another patient visit we had was with a person that was upset that decision was made on the behalf that interfered with a scheduled medical appointment, and that interference caused a lot of stress, and it was the patient felt that it was not the person's responsibility to step in and make a decision when the person doesn't have a guardian and isn't deemed incapacitated or needing a guardian and hasn't been deemed incompetent. So the patient filed a grievance. That grievance was resolved quickly with administration, and they substantiated that the staff member, the nurse, should not have taken the action that they did, and they worked to resolve it. I think we're going to have executive session where we're going to discuss that. Since that point, there's been some other discussions about patients in general and patients interaction with the IOC and how the patients feel that sometimes talking to the IOC, which is their right, there is a perceived heightened risk to them and their progression. So we're going to talk about that in our executive session, and we'll make a vote. I think we're going to have to come back on public to vote, but that's kind of the overview of it. So are there any, I know Alice isn't here. Has anyone else been on any visits other than the ones that we've discussed already?
Yes, we had one visit. It was you and me, Lori. This is Kay. We called over to a patient on the forensic campus to see how this patient was coping after having certain text removed from his unit, and he said doing well. So I think overall that was the only other thing to report.
Yeah, that's right. The patient was satisfied with the removal of the lead tech. That was the one that we talked about that had been put on administrative leave. The patient felt safe. The patient said the new staff is treating them well, and that there are reports that the person that was in the video is working on units and doesn't seem to be having any behaviors or problems. So that's all we can report. Okay.
Lori, if I may, just one quick follow-up on that substantiated complaint. There were two complaints that were substantiated this month. And in addition to substantiating it, I just wanted to share that the nursing exec team is reminding everybody on all the units that patients really do need to be involved in making their own medical decisions. That was really the whole treatment team that kind of made that decision, but the patient absolutely should have made the decision. And the clinical teams are going to have those discussions in their clinical meetings on both campuses, on all units as well.
Thank you. And that's good that some of the grievances and complaints are getting substantiated, because I know that's always been a topic, that the low percentage that are substantiated. Okay, I see Dr. Flowers is on. Welcome. I'm glad you were able to join.
Thank you.
I don't know if you have any updates. Oops, go ahead.
Oh, no, I said thank you. I apologize for my late arrival.
No worries. Okay, we were just... I mean, we're happy to see some of the new changes that we're seeing probably under your leadership, along with Mike Sheldon's, which seems to be giving patients more benefits of the food visits and the phone times, and also, you know, follow up whenever there's incidents, looking at their the pharmacy team looking at their meds. All seems positive to me. And more visits for the civil campus into the community. Okay, before we go to public comment, do any of the committee members have anything that they'd like to discuss? We'll go public, then we have executive, and then if we make a decision, we have to go back to vote in a public forum. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to public comment, and then we'll go to executive session, then we'll come back if we
Rhonda, what
do you want your name in the record?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make sure comment about the mail policy to make sure they check what they're checking is outgoing mail and conveyance by private hands, which is in 39 USC and is also in 18 USC, that that it is an exception that I can, as long as it's conveyed by private hands, as long as I'm not compensating them, paying them or anything, I can hand my letter to anybody. And here's the thing, the whole thing about this is the law is very strict on this and delaying the mail. If I need to get my mail out in the morning and someone's going down to get packages, I should have the right and privilege, to send my mail with this person conveyed by private hands, as the law states, instead of having to wait for the clerk to pick it up, and go into the mail that evening, and then go out the next day. I can send it with somebody getting a package, or whatever, and have it go out that day. So it's delayed a day, and the law is very strict on delaying or retarding the mail. It's called retarding the mail. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other callers?
Yeah, hi, Charles Edmark on Kenyon.
Charles, do you want your name? Do you want your name? Okay.
Charles Edmark. And I'm with Van Platten, North America, loyally serving Westerners since 1841. And I want to thank the IOC on looking into getting the range with a hood. That apparently is no longer an issue. Also, I do have a lot of supporters concerning expanding the gym so they can be a legitimate gym. We can't play basketball, it's so small. So we're working on that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Are there other people talking right now?
Yes, there are. There's someone talking, so if everyone can mute while Charles talks.
Is it on right now? Can you hear me?
Yes, is Charles done? Okay, Charles, if you're there, and you were talking about, you know, we're not allowed to respond, but if you have any more to say, please speak up now. Okay, anyone else?
Yes, this is Bran from Sycamore. We were curious as to why we were cut off from points for the community meeting and wrap-up meetings that we have. I was also running those meetings for the unit I'm on, and I was being given, you know, leadership points for doing that. That's been done away. They said they can't give us any more community meeting or wrap-up meeting points. I don't want to get into any names or anything like that, but I just it was conveyed to me that it was possibly because one of the patients had been attending so many groups that his you know, usage of the points to collect you know, hygiene products and things like that was excessive, and that was possibly the reason they were taking the points away from us. I was thinking, if that is the case, why wouldn't they just limit the amount of product, you know, hygiene product that you can get per month, like they do on the drink mixes, instead of taking away our points for everybody? Because it kind of takes away the incentive for, you know, for people to go to the groups, for me to run the group, to spend time doing those things when there's no you know, gain for progress, you know, for either records or I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yes, we can't comment on public comment, but we heard you.
John Wallace on Sycamore.
Hi, John.
Hi. Once again, hey, I'm very glad to hear that we are going to have some input on our medical treatment. I came to this facility with arthritis that was well managed through diet, and it has been a struggle to get that accepted here. I was forced to resort to opiates and ibuprofen until a couple months ago I started passing blood and had to quit taking the Motrin. And now there's nothing controlling the inflammation. And I still can't get a doctor's support. And all I'm asking for is to be able to choose from what's available during meal times and when I eat it within reason. I don't understand why I'm being punished for that. Also on Sycamore, we've been limited to 3 hours of access to the standalone computers and televisions, time that we can reserve. There are many unusable hours on our sign-up sheet. And I understand this is the only unit that's doing that to it. Staff have been very clear to the other patients that it's my fault. I don't understand how the IOC can allow this and not come and talk to me. I invite you all to come see John Wallace on Sycamore. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Do we have anyone else from the public? I couldn't tell whether that was an echo or someone trying to speak. Okay, anyone from the public that would like to make any comments? Okay, hearing none. Now, if you want to get off, I think it's star six or pound six, star six if you're on mute. But if not, we will adjourn to
are you there?
Someone else? Yeah, we're here.
Okay. I'm just going to make a comment. This is the comment thing. Back in 2022, I had a package that I sent out. It was one of the cylinders that you roll up big prints and you put inside them. And so I mailed it out. It got to the destination, but the contents were empty and it was wrapped with different tape than it was. So my cousin who received the package filed a report with the Postal Service, and I wrote a grievance here and tried to get things, but the grievance, like all the grievances, come back that there's nothing's been violated, no harm done or whatever. It seems like that's like 95% of the grievance. I know there's a large majority of them that go out that are probably nonsense, but there is legitimate grievances that go out. And this one particularly, they didn't look real hard into. They just came back and told me that they didn't tamper with it here. But the tape that was used on the cylinder was the silver tape that was found on some laurel. And no one ever, that I know of anyway, ran back cameras or went to see why the tube was moved, where it was taken to. And it didn't make sense why the contents were empty, because she got the tube and then she asked me, she goes, did you send me an empty tube? Thinking that I was a little bit nutty. And anyway, I told her, no, I didn't do that at all. And then she told me off the tape, but I thought I'd mention that. And then the comment that I really wanted to make is that there are so many problems here. If somebody was to come in here and actually from the outside, be able to observe what goes on here, everything from the check workers on their phones to doing whatever they want, stuff that an administrator would sit there and say, hey, you know, these aren't legitimate working practices. But what I was going to say is that this whole committee thing, being something that is supposed to be on our side, it feels like it doesn't really do anything. And I would choose to remain anonymous because I have had retaliation in the past, and I've also been told that if you go against the system that you'll be there longer. But I just wanted to make that comment that we have a lot of problems here. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, do we have anyone else?
One more time. Hello?
Hello.
This is John Wallace, and just briefly. Am I hearing an echo of my stuff?
I think it was somebody's music.
Sorry, I hear a lot of noise.
No, I think it's because the other units aren't muted. John, we can give you 1 minute, but we have to go to executive session.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. A lot of our mail issues stem from the lack of integrity of the staff here. The letters often have personal information, and it would be nice if the U.S. Post Office would put a letter drop box somewhere where patients could deposit letters personally. Packages, of course, they need to go through security protocol. And the previous gentleman, the retaliations he's talking about are very real. I have suffered, and my family suffered from retaliations by the staff at this facility. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Okay, so for those on the committee, we have
I'll need a phone number and a pin to dial in.
Okay. Yes. It is 720-500-3146. And it's pin number 309-587-968 pound. And okay. For the others on the committee?
Okay, yes, that's for me. 720-500-3146, 309-587-968 pound.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And for the other committee members, the link was in the email, and also Larry just put it in the chat.
Okay, I'll call back. Thank you, Lori.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Dee. I'm on. I was able to remember the numbers.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I think we're waiting. We're waiting for Chuck to get on. Welcome back. We did have executive session, and we do have a matter that we would like to hold on. I have to wait until we get, let's see, 1, 2, 3. We need to wait for Chuck to get back on. Larry,
are you two not in the same place?
Okay. Well, we are, but we're not on the same computer. We are two independent people. So Larry, do you want to start the recording?
It's still going, Lori.
Okay. Well, welcome back. We did come from executive session, and we did discuss patient complaint of alleged retaliation after filing a grievance and also after involvement with the IOC. So would anyone like to file a motion?
This is Dee. I will file a motion. I request that we obtain an ROI from Kay. The patient that's making the allegations of retaliation, so that we can review her medical record to look for a pattern of documentation from nursing to support or not support that.
I second that, Dee.
All in favor?
I do my best. Aye.
So moved. Aye. Okay, so moved. Okay, and with that, I see we still have a member of the public. Would any more public comment? Okay, with that, I move to adjourn.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you, Lori.
Take care,
guys.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Good night. Thanks.